originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone. Good afternoon and welcome to the show trainers listen to. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, coming to you from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. You, of course, are listening live throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, or tuned in to our free live streaming or archived podcast of the show, and you're doing that on our HRN website at horseracingradio.net. Well, today's guest, much like others that I've had the privilege to visit with in recent weeks, namely Norm Cassie and Andy Biancone, possesses a huge, massive trainer's pedigree. His father has trained a multitude of stakes winners and champions and has been a member of the Horse Racing Hall of Fame since 2004. His uncle has saddled more than 300 winners, including a two-time Horse of the Year. Yeah. As they say at the horse sales, there's a lot of black type on this guy's page. So please join me in welcoming to the show here this afternoon the 30-year-old native of Lexington, Kentucky, Reeve McGahey. Reeve, welcome to the program, my friend.
Thank you.
You know, I went back and looked, and you were first on this show 4 years ago. It was October 26th of 2016. And at that point, you were working with your dad after spending time working with your uncle. So we get a whole different perspective today as you're now out training horses on your own.
Yeah, a little change of scenery now.
Little different. You're down there at Oaklawn, sent out the first horse in your name a couple of days ago. It was February 2nd on Sunday. Didn't win, but the wins will come. What was that like for you, bringing that first one over in your own name?
It was fun. You know, I wasn't terribly nervous, and we were kind of in a little bit of a difficult spot, and I knew we were just kind of trying to get the year started with him, just to get a race under him. So I wasn't so nervous because I didn't necessarily think that we had any big chance of winning. I was just hoping that he'd go over there and run well. And actually, I thought he did. He tried the whole way, and next time that'll set us up for whatever level or wherever we decide to put him next.
Is there a different feeling or a different vibe when you bring a horse over that you're going to saddle for yourself in your name as opposed to bringing a horse over as an assistant for somebody else?
A little bit, but not too much difference so far. I'm sure once we get going along here and it starts getting pretty serious, then it might be a little different, but the other day felt pretty routine.
All right, so why Oaklawn? Tell me the story of how you came to be and how you got to Oaklawn Park.
Here because of Mr. Anthony. We're lucky enough to get the opportunity with him to get some horses for him last spring, 2-year-olds and a couple older horses while we were with my dad. And he was just looking for someone to come to Oaklawn Park to bring all of his horses down here. And now they're all here between me and Willie Van Meter. So basically just here because of him.
How many times have you been to Oaklawn before this trip?
I'd never been here. The other few weeks ago when I drove in the gate was the first time I'd been here.
Yeah, what do you remember about seeing it for the first time?
When I got here the first time, I got here at night. So it was pitch black, so I just came to check my barn so I could knew what I needed to do in the morning, start getting things ready. But so I didn't really see much. It was cold that night. It was in the 30s. And then came in the next morning. It was still dark. Kind of worked all morning, and the horses got here that afternoon, and But it's a pretty backside. It's nice. I like it so far.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned the name, too, Mr. Anthony, who is, of course, John Ed Anthony. And I touched on this in the introduction. Your dad, Hall of Famer Shug McGahey, Mr. Anthony, John Ed Anthony, had owned horses with your dad back in the 1980s. As a matter of fact, your dad trained champion Van Landingham for him in 1985. That has to be pretty cool to be training for the same gentleman that you are now, that your dad was, you know, part of his legacy, too.
Yeah, he was a big part of my dad's career and a big influence on kind of getting him to the level he wanted to be at. So they've maintained a relationship through the years, and it just kind of came full circle this last spring. And it's exciting to have the opportunity, and I hope we can have some of the same success that my dad and him had.
Do you feel any extra, I don't know if pressure's the right word, Reeve, and correct me if I'm wrong on that, but do you feel any extra incentive to try to do well considering who you're training for?
Oh, of course, yeah, no. They've made a big investment in the sport, and obviously you don't want to let them down, and you don't want to let yourself down either. So, yeah, you just try to work as hard as you can and go back to all the things that you've experienced in the past and hope it all pays off. But I wouldn't necessarily pray pressure, but there's a big responsibility there, and you don't want to take it lightly.
Yeah, John Ed Anthony campaigning horses under the Loblolly banner for many years and now short leash stable. What kind of person is Mr. Anthony to be around?
I haven't had a whole lot of chance to be around him so far, but all my interactions with him have been great. I mean, he's very fair. I think he's just kind of an old school guy, and I think upfront about what he wants and what he expects, and it's been really good to me so far. So hopefully as we get going, things will go well and see where it goes from there.
Did I see you have another horse in tomorrow too?
Yes, we have a maiden second time starter tomorrow in the last race.
All right. Maybe the first win comes tomorrow then.
Yeah, hopefully. I do think I have high expectations for him. He doesn't necessarily need to win tomorrow, but I do think he'll run well. His first race is kind of a throwout race. Three quarters a little short for him, and we're just kind of just trying to get him started. He'd been training on him all summer and fall, and it was time to run him. So he got in there kind of amongst horses, and going three quarters, he wasn't really quick enough early to place himself where he probably wanted to be, and he just got a little green in there amongst all the horses and kind of backed out of it. But when he got away from everybody, the last eighth of a mile or so, he started running again. So it doesn't look like a whole lot on paper, but I think I expect him to run well tomorrow. Hopefully that means he wins, but I'd be happy just to see him put out a good effort.
Yeah, and the name of the horse, of course, is Pine Knoll, who races in race number 9 at Oaklawn tomorrow, February 6th. Declan Cannon will get the leg up, just like your first starter back on Sunday. Why has Declan kind of been your go-to guy?
It just kind of worked out that the first two horses we had calls on were with him. He's somebody I've known, and I think he's a good rider, and I trust him. I know that he's helped us out a lot in the morning, and I know that when he comes back, he's going to be able to tell me something, and it's going to mean something to him riding the horse versus somebody maybe that I don't know as well that might just get off the horse and say it wasn't his day, and that's about it. But it just kind of worked out that the first two horses we had to run were the horses he had called on.
You know, you bring up a great point too, Reeve. How important is that communication between a jockey and a trainer, and even an exercise rider and a trainer in the morning workouts?
No, I think it's very important because I'm not out there on their back. I mean, there are things I think I can see from the ground that they might not be able to see on their backs, but there's a whole lot that they can feel or tell me about the horse that I can't experience. So I think it's important to have somebody you trust and that trusts you also, that that you can work with.
Have you ever had a rider come back to you either after a workout or after a race when you were working with your dad and your uncle and some of the other trainers you worked with, and they come back to you afterwards and they kind of surprise you when you thought you saw one thing, but they felt something else and they described it differently and it turned out that they were right?
Yeah, there have been occasions, yeah, certainly. You see something happen in a race, maybe, and you say, or something happens that you don't see, and they come back and say, you know, don't worry about it. This or that happened that you couldn't see, and that's why this happened, and just stick with it or whatever, or change this or that. But, yeah, there have been plenty of times that riders have come back in the mornings and the afternoons and told you something that maybe you wouldn't have been able to tell from the grandstand.
Talking with trainer Reeve McGahee here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Told you at the beginning of the show that Reeve is the son of Hall of Fame trainer Shug McGahee. He is also the nephew of trainer Charlie Lopresti. If you missed that portion there, yeah, that little tidbit. Charlie Lopresti, the trainer of two-time Horse of the Year Wise Dan, who Reeve had a chance to be around and work with during his time there. We're going to talk about that as we move throughout the program here this afternoon. But Reeve, spent some time talking about the decision to take over this string at Oaklawn and to go out on your own.
Yeah, I'd worked for Charlie for around 5 years, and I'd gotten to the point now I'd been working for my dad for around 5 years. And we talked about it over the last couple of years about maybe when the right opportunity comes up, maybe that would be something to look at. And just so happened last winter, Mr. Anthony called my dad about a couple things about looking for somebody maybe to take some horses to Oaklawn, and he brought my name up, and my dad said, yeah, I think that would be a good idea, and he asked me if I was interested in it, and I was, so that led to us meeting with Mr. Anthony in the spring, and then going Mr. Anthony and his son Ed to Ocala in May, and that just kind of got the ball rolling.
You know, I'm always curious because of the fact that before I got into the horse racing, when I was living back in Massachusetts, before I even moved to Kentucky, I worked in the family business with my father. And I'm always curious when a young trainer like yourself, who has worked for somebody who has had so much success like your dad, and you decide to make that move, you talk about the conversations the two of you had together. What are some of those conversations like, Reeve? Are they more boss to employee, or is it more father to son?
Yeah, it changes time to time. You know, a lot of them are on the day-to-day level or more boss to employee, but I mean, we certainly had plenty of father and son conversations, and a lot more as we got closer to when I was leaving to start this venture.
What advice did your dad give you when you both made the decision that you were going to make this move and go out on your own?
He just, you know, trust what you know, basically, and you know, be patient. Everything's not going to go right all the time, but just work through it. And as long as you work hard and are honest with everybody, then it'll all work out.
What makes your dad such a good trainer?
I think a lot of the things I just mentioned. He's upfront and honest with all the clients and the people, and very patient with the horses. And he seems to know when one horse needs to be pushed harder, when one needs maybe to be backed off of, or he has a very good eye of when a horse is doing well and when maybe they're not doing as well and they need to be freshened up a little bit.
Are there some similarities or even some stark differences between the way your dad trains a horse and the way your uncle Charlie Lopresti trained horses?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of similarities, actually. A lot of things very similar. When I was working for Charlie, you know, we're lucky we had, there were a lot of good horses in the barn at that time, and he was able to give a lot of them winters off, which I think really made a big difference in them and really lengthened out their careers. And for the most part, really, my dad does a lot of the same things. They might not go home per se, but they all kind of get a break at some point during the year. And And then I think that's allowed him, especially with some of these horses, to get really good when they get 5, 6 years old. And so I think a lot of what they do is similar, but little variations here and there, but nothing too drastic.
Yeah, you know, your dad is often described as being old school. What does that even mean when we say a trainer is old school?
I'm not really sure, to be honest. I mean, he works hard. He's at the barn just about every afternoon, and if there's one running, he's there. You know, he's not watching from a TV somewhere. He's around all the time. He knows all the horses he has. He trains them. I mean, he trains every horse to be a good horse, and if they don't pan out, they don't pan out. But he gives them all the opportunity.
All right, so if he's old school, what does that make you?
I don't know. Hopefully old school, too. I think I took up a lot of his characteristics, I hope at least.
Yeah, if you could do one thing identical to the way that your dad does it, what's the one thing you're going to try and do now that you're out on your own?
I just hopefully the way he's able to develop horses from start to finish. You know, his horses typically they get better as they go. You know, usually the first race they run is not going to be their best one, and so I think. Just that patient model and ability to develop horses.
How much time have you spent talking with him and kind of picking his brain since you've been at Oaklawn?
We talk just about every day. So it's just normal day-to-day conversations. Nothing too crazy. I mean, we've had a couple little things pop up, and I'll just ask him, you know, what his opinion on it.
Yeah, how great is it to have a resource like that to be able to pick up the phone or to be able to text them or call them and say, hey, what do I do here?
It's nice. Kind of a stress reliever, to be honest.
Yeah, it's got to take a lot of pressure off of you.
Yeah, no, it does.
So how many horses do you have at Oaklawn now, Reef?
We have 11 right now.
Is that the optimal number, or do you think you'll see that number grow?
Well, I hope. It's not 11 forever, but
yeah, not forever. Just for in the meantime, in the short term.
In the meantime, it's good. Hopefully, as we go along in the spring, we'll be able to expand a little bit. But no, I think it's a good number to get started. You know, most of them are horses that are ready to run or close to ready to run. So we'll be busy enough with those 11. But yeah, hopefully, as we go along, we'll pick up some more.
Yeah, you know, 11 horses is a good number, especially for a young man like yourself who is just getting started doing this, you know, being the boss on your own, for example. 11 horses is a great number because you can go down the shed row every single morning and put your hands on every single one of them and not have to, you know, worry about having too many horses where you're not able to do those kinds of things.
Yeah, no, it keeps everything kind of compact. You know, the people we have here are all people I trust, and I'm able to see every horse, touch every horse every day, and know every characteristics of each of the horses here. So, yeah, makes it easy to keep your thumb on top of everything.
One of the questions that I often get when I talk to people at racetracks that we visit throughout the year is they'll ask me about trainers that have strings all over the country, big, big barns, and they'll say, how on earth does a trainer keep up with all those horses? And of course, I've asked many trainers the question here on this show, and they always tell me, well, it's all about having good assistants and people you can trust at those other locations. You don't have to worry about that yet, but tell me about your team now with just 11 horses. How many people are working with you, and how does it all come together every single day, Reeve?
Yeah, we have a couple grooms, a couple hot walkers, and two exercise riders, and two people we kind of picked up as we got down here, and they've worked out great. And the other guys I've all either been working with or have known for a while. And, you know, lucky to have them. They're all been big help for me. Just people that know you and know the system that you want to run and makes it a little easier coming to work, and you're not having to tell someone exactly what to do all the time, and you can focus a little more on actually trying to train the horses.
Yeah, it makes a huge, huge difference. What do you think your biggest strength as a young trainer is, Reeve?
I think patience with the horses. You know, I don't think I get in a big rush. You know, I like to think I let the horse tell me when they're ready to so much as breeze or run or whenever. So,
Has there been anything that's come up to this point that has kind of surprised you that you weren't really expecting to have to deal with? Maybe a challenge you didn't see, or a hurdle you didn't see that you were going to have to overcome?
Not so much so far. I mean, it's normal stress levels, really. I mean, I was kind of in places where I was on my own when I was working for my dad, so it's a little different when you don't have that one person ahead of you to when you're on your own, you know, everything's on you. So it's kind of an added stress level, but not to say you didn't stress before.
Yeah. Reeve McGahee with me here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Obviously, Reeve, your dad, your uncle, Charlie Lopresti, were a major and have been a major influence on you, and they'll continue to be as you continue to grow into this role now that you're out on your own. But who are some of the other people that have kind of had an influence or made an impression on you?
You know, a lot of people just that I've worked with just in the last 10 years, grooms, exercise riders, other assistants. My dad's other assistant, Robbie Medina, he's a big influence on me. I mean, we're good friends, but he's somebody I still talk to almost daily also. So, and then my mom, she rode and trained for a little while on her own. My stepdad, he rode, and he actually worked for Charlie for a long time too. And my aunt, Amy, not everybody, just friends. A lot of people throughout the years that I've had a relationship with have had a big influence on me.
You know, I mentioned the name Norm Cassie at the top of the show, of course, working on his own now after spending a lot of time with his dad, Mark. I mentioned Andy Biancone, who is now working alongside her father, Patrick. They were recent guests on this program with me, and there have been several other sons or daughters of prominent trainers I've spoken with over the years. Riley Mott comes to mind, for example. Do you feel, Reeve, that the game is a little bit different now, that you have to do things a little differently than the way that your parents did, and you're going to have to continue to do things differently to be successful?
I think a lot's changed, like kind of on the ownership side. You know, it's more, it's not so many big, like private stables. Like my dad he's been lucky enough trained for the Fitzes and Mr. Janney and Mr. Parrish and those guys. There aren't as many of those guys around anymore. So I think maybe being a trainer nowadays, you have to be maybe a little more social, I guess, just because you're going to have maybe a wider variety of clients. But, the game's, everything's kind of public now, so I think, I think as far as training the horses, you still have to train them. I think all that's about the same.
Yeah, I'm glad you bring up the public part, because everything is now pretty much out there instantly when it happens. And we see so many people that have an opinion on social media. That's changed the way sports in general are handled nowadays, and really life in general is handled. So, do you spend much time, Reeve, on social media, and is that a way for you to network with new owners or anything like that?
I don't really know. I mean, I look at Twitter as a news source, so I'm not active on it. I don't think I've posted anything on Twitter or Facebook in 3 or 4 years, but I have them and I look at them, but I'm not really an active participant.
Well, that explains why
using them as news sources.
That explains why you didn't retweet the tweet that I tagged you in about this show tonight.
Yeah, that was funny.
You know, you bring up the Phipps family too, and I think that's great. And we need to talk about that for a minute. Your dad, I went back and read an article when he was inducted into the Hall of Fame, and of course he mentioned that he was forever grateful to the Phipps family and everything that they did for his career. What did that family mean to you as you were growing up?
It meant a lot to me. I mean, it was kind of an honor. I think of the barn, you know, you think of the Phippses, and I know my, a lot of the opportunities my dad wouldn't have had without them, and I mean, that probably would have meant a lot of opportunities that I wouldn't have had growing up, really. So, I mean, they've been maybe indirectly a big part of my life. So,
yeah, there were so many of the horses that your dad trained for them that went on to great careers and championships and countless graded stakes, and they were doing that before you were even born. So, have you spent a lot of time? I'm sure you have, but have you spent a lot of time going back and watching, you know, a lot of those races and kind of, you know, just taking it all in?
Yeah, I've went back and watched most of the replays of all the better horses they had throughout the years, and I still like hearing some of the stories from my dad about horses that maybe you didn't hear as much about that were extremely really talented that maybe only ran once or twice and just didn't quite pan out. But so it's a long list. So it's fun to go back and watch some of those races. I was talking to the guy that's doing our blacksmith work today, he used to ride Ali Sheba, and we were actually talking about the classic when he just beat Seeking the Gold. I was talking about it wasn't that big of a margin to victory. So.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty special. I mean, those times were just, and I'll tell you a story after this commercial break, too, that ties in with the same conversation, but it was an amazing run, and you know, your dad continues to show up with big horses, and now you get the chance to step up to the plate and do it yourself, and that's pretty cool. I'm visiting with trainer Reeve McGahee here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Going to get to a short commercial break. We'll come back with part two, and I think you're going to like some of the conversation in the second half of the show. Stay with us. Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. The Fasig Tipton Gulfstream sale is hotter than ever. The nation's premier two-year-olds in training sale is now accepting nominations for the 2020 sale. In 2019, the sale recorded a record average, record median, and sold more horses for $1 million or more than any other two-year-old sale in North America, including a $3.65 million sale topper that was the most expensive two-year-old sold in North America since 2006. Nominate today, the Fasig Tipton Gulfstream sale, April 1st, 2020, at Gulfstream Park. Where will you be?
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the Phipps in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now, get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Time-tested Broken Vow continues to deliver quality black-type stakes horses at a 15% clip. The top son of Unbridled has sired over 150 black-type horses, 80 black-type winners, and over $75 million in earnings. Among the 12 black-type horses sired by Broken Vow in 2019 was dual Canadian Classic winner Tone Broke, winner of classic races on dirt and turf. Also the sire of Imprimis, the Speedy Keeneland graded stakes winner of over $440,000. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Make Woodbine the place to train and race your thoroughbred in 2020. The Woodbine Backstretch is equipped with a 1 mile dirt training track and a 7 furlong turf training track. Racing surfaces include a 1 mile all-weather Tapeta main track, a 7 furlong inner turf course, and the 1.5 mile E.P. Taylor turf course. Opening day is April 18th, the Queen's Plate June 27th, Woodbine Mile Weekend September 19th and 20th, and the Pattison Canadian International, now a $1 million purse, on Sunday, October 19th. Visit woodbine.com/incentives for the full stake schedule and more information.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Clifford Trevor will not give up as they approach the top of the stretch. Easy Goer still second, and those two have opened about six on Shy Tom moving up in third. Clifford Trevor nearest the rail. Easy Goer on the outside. Those two approach the four. There goes Easy Goer. Easy Goer gets the lead. Easy Goer getting clear by two. Clifford Trevor second by six. Shy Tom is third. Easy Goer.
Legendary Marshall Cassidy with the call of the 1989 Travers Stakes at Saratoga, and Easy Goer getting the victory for Hall of Famer Shug McGahee. It was a memorable moment for me, which I'll tell you more about momentarily. And I know when he goes back and watches the replays, it was a memorable moment for Reeve McGahee, who is my special guest on the program here tonight. Want to remind you that if you missed any portion of the show, all you have to do is head back to our website. That's horseracingradio.net. You can also go to Apple Podcasts, and you can listen to the show at your leisure. Again, all there for you at horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts. And don't forget to follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and on Instagram. Reeve, well, I mentioned that was a special moment for me, and I've told this story to your father before when he's seen me either privately at the racetrack or on this particular program, but I can remember sitting at the picnic tables at the top of the stretch at Saratoga, which was kind of my home track, and watching Easy Goer win the Travers. And I think I had $2 across the board on him, which at the time was a big bet for me, and he was a heavy favorite. I might have won $2.80 or something, and I was hooked on the sport for life, and I fell in love with Easy Goer. He became my first horse crush. And I think I have your dad to blame or to credit for being involved in the sport, however you want to look at it.
Yeah, I grew up always around the horses, and I love the horses, but really what kind of got me all hooked on it was cashing a ticket. So that's kind of what really brought me to the sport on a full-time basis.
Yeah, and back then, you know, I mean, 1989, I was, what, 17 years old, 18 years old. And, you know, $2 across the board, you win a couple bucks, you're just happy that you won and didn't lose because you didn't have a whole lot of money to bet with in the first place. So it was all about just cashing tickets and being right around your friends, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Now that's how I grew up, obviously, in Lexington. So we'd go out to Keeneland, and I remember I'd usually be given $20, and that was the last me the whole day. So two across the board was my usual bet. So I was always happy if I came with 20 and left with 30. I was pretty pleased.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Easy Goer was what? When he won the Travers, that was 1 year before Reeve McGahee. Is that right?
I was born, I think, 9 days before the Belmont. So I would only been about three months old, I guess, around then.
Yeah, so you obviously don't remember that you know, live in person, but you remember it from going back and watching some of the replays like we talked about in the first half of the show. Where does Easy Goer rank for you?
He ranks pretty highly just because obviously what he meant to my dad and even what he meant to my mom. So I know he's her favorite. So although I wasn't around for his – well, I mean, I was alive but not able to really appreciate much of his career, but I enjoy watching the replays and I enjoy hearing stories about him. So he's meant a lot basically to my family. So for that reason, he's high on the list.
Who's your favorite Shug McGahee trained horse?
Just because that I've been around. That's hard to say. Ironicus, I was only around him for 6 to 9 months or so, but he was very, very smart horse, very talented. Unlucky, really, that he wasn't able to kind of put full seasons together so that you could really see how good he really was. The last year and a half or so with Code of Honor was a lot of fun. He gave me the first opportunity I've ever had to participate in the Derby, which was kind of a dream come true.
Yeah, what was that like?
That was exciting. I you grow up dreaming about it, and it was fun to go into it with a horse that you thought had a really good chance, and he was doing well going into the race. And I'm sure to be in it with when you feel like you have a good chance, it was an exciting few weeks.
Did you make the walkover with him?
Yes, we did.
I've heard that is one of the greatest things you can do in all of sports. Is it?
Yeah, definitely. It's exciting. It's a little nerve-wracking when you're kind of trying to worry about your horse. But there's not much that can replace that feeling.
How about walking into the paddock with him?
It was exciting. Yeah. Being that he was doing so well going into the race, and you had a pretty good confident feeling he was going to run well. You're a little nervous, obviously, but just kind of ready to get the race started.
You know, I've asked
to make sure all the little stuff goes right between now and then. He's a pretty smart horse, and he usually behaves pretty well. So he behaved well in the walkover, and whenever he goes and stands in the saddling stall, he'll stand there all day long if he wants. So he handled everything well. He walked right in the stall, saddled him. We had to stand there for a while, and he never blinked, so that made it a little easier.
Were there some butterflies watching him go in the gate?
Yeah, definitely nervous. But also just kind of an excited nervous. You know, we were confident that he was going to run well. Just kind of hoping he got the right trip, and obviously a couple things maybe go a little differently. Maybe it would have been different, but he ran well, and he had his chance, and certainly wasn't disappointed in him.
As a Kentucky kid, did you get teared up when they played my old Kentucky home?
I think I held it together pretty well.
Yeah, it's not easy to do.
No, it's not. Everybody, I guess, I can't say it's too much different. I mean, I'm from Kentucky, but I think everybody that does this dreams of winning the Kentucky Derby, so I don't want to say that necessarily would mean more to me or anyone else. It means a lot to everyone. So, it was an exciting day.
What did it mean when your dad finally broke through and got that elusive Kentucky Derby win?
It meant a lot just because I know how much it meant to him. I mean, I know what it would mean to me to win a Derby. And he had to wait a long time for it, and he was patient. There's plenty of horses that he probably could have pushed along and tried to get him there and maybe ruined him in the process. But so he wanted to make sure he showed up with the right horse, and seemed like everything went well all winter with that horse. I wasn't around, but just from talking to him and talking to other people in the barn, so it just everything worked out well.
Yeah, that was, of course, Orb in 2013. Where did you watch that race, Reeve?
I actually watched it with him. I was working for Charlie at the time, and
okay.
Wise Dan won the race before it, and luckily there's about over an hour and a half in between the Derby and the Woodford Reserve, or that's what it was at the time. So I was basically able to, by the time Dan was done cooling out, I ran over to my dad's barn and walked over with him for the Derby.
Oh, cool. All right, so that was that your first experience doing the walkover with Orb?
I did it with Czarland camera. I think maybe it was 2000.
Yep.
That was my first experience. I was still pretty young, but it was fun.
Yeah, so you're an old pro at this now. You've got this down. You just need to get a horse that'll get you there on the first Saturday in May.
Yeah, I don't know. I might lose about 100 pounds if it was one of mine. But,
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I've asked other trainers like Doug O'Neill, for example, and Graham Motion. When you finally break through and you win it, does it make you want to get back there again even more than you did before that you actually experienced that feeling of winning it? So, you know, I'll ask you. I mean, you've been there now. You said Code of Honor was such a big deal for you because you knew him so well and doing that walkover. Does it make you, now that you're out on your own, want to get there even more than you did before, Reeve?
Yeah, not so much even that I'm on my own. I remember as soon as they crossed the wire, my first thoughts were, how do we get back here next year and make up that length and a half? You know, you just want to do it again. So I know it's probably not going to be this year, but hopefully somewhere down the line that we get the opportunity. But if it happens, it happens. But yeah, it definitely gives you that craving, because I know I just remember last year, basically as soon as I crossed the wire, my first thoughts were we need to do this again next year.
Reeve McGahey is my special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Reeve, let's spend a few minutes talking about Wise Dan. You mentioned the fact that you're working with your uncle, Charlie Lopresti, before you started working with your dad. Wise Dan, two-time Horse of the Year. He was just so, so special. Tell me your best Wise Dan story.
My best Wise Dan story. I don't know if there's an individual story, just the whole 4 or 5 year process there. I mean, he was getting to spend every day with him. That was a pretty special thing. You know, he's kind of a different horse. He's extremely intelligent. When you looked him in the eye, it felt like you were looking another person in the eye. He did things that other horses just didn't do. I was extremely lucky. Basically, just most of my morning was spent with him, so whenever he traveled, usually go with him. So it was just fortunate to be around a horse like that, but I don't know if I'll ever will be again. I hope so, but there's not too many of those floating around.
No, he was extremely special. He is now at Old Friends. People can go see him at Old Friends here in Kentucky, and have you had time to go out and say hello to him and see him on the farm?
He's at my aunt Amy and Charlie's farm.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah, he's over there. That's right.
Yeah, usually when I'm in Kentucky, I go back and see him.
Yeah, that's good. Does he remember you?
I don't know if he remembers me or not. He used to probably, he might, but because he picks on me all the time. It's funny. You know, if he's around people he knew all the time, then he'd be hard on him. But if a stranger walked up, he was like a little puppy.
That's great. Why was I thinking he was at Old Friends?
I'm not really sure.
<laughs> I don't know. Yeah, just no clue. I had it in my head that that's where he was. But no, he's still back on the farm.
Yeah, he's on the farm. He's turned out with his older brother, Successful Man.
So cool. How many years did you work with him?
It was the fall of his four-year-old year when I started. I started there in the summer of his four-year-old year. All the way, almost 5 years. I'm trying to think when you retired, what year it was, but
yeah,
4 or 5 years.
Yeah, I guess he retired. What was it, 2014, right?
Yeah, I think he was 8.
Yeah, after he won the Shadwell Turf Mile.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah.
Just so spectacular. Did you have a favorite Wise Dan performance?
When he won the Ben Ali, I mean, he's got a lot of them. I guess a smaller one would be the Ben Ali when he broke the track record and basically just ran off for a mile and eighth. And he beat Big Blue Kitten, who obviously is a really nice horse, and he beat him by 10 or 11 lengths. Then the second Breeders' Cup was pretty special just because he got beat at in the Shadwell Mile, and people start saying he's done, whatever. So that was exciting just to see him come back and win. And the fact he didn't have the best trip that day, he broke a little slow and was kind of up against it and still circled the field and won. And his last Shadwell Mile, too, was pretty exciting. I mean, he was looking towards the grandstand when they sprung the gate and he missed the break, and kind of same thing. He had everything up against him, and he still won easy. He was a resilient horse. It didn't really matter what happened in the race. He was going to win.
Is there a benefit, Reeve, to being around horses of that caliber when you get a chance to start training on your own now?
I think so, yes. Just little characteristics that you seem to pick up on with good horses, you know, that your average horse doesn't always exhibit. So there's usually with the good ones, there's just a different class level there. And you almost have to treat them different. They just operate on a different level. So it's nice to be around that. I've been fortunate to have the opportunity to be around a few of them.
Yeah, and several, as a matter of fact. Reeve McGahee here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Let's go back even further, Reeve. You talk about growing up in Lexington. What's your first recollection of going to the races or beginning to get hooked on the sport?
I just remember kind of my mom taking me to the races when I was younger, and I think I went with some friends maybe first and then kind of got hooked on it, and then I used to beg her to take me out there to Keeneland, and she'd take me out there a couple times during the meet, and my stepdad was working on the racetrack at that time too, and so when they'd run horses, I'd go. And when we first moved back to Kentucky, my mom was training horses, so I used to travel with her all the time whenever she'd run horses at Turfway, Ellis, Kentucky Downs, or wherever. We'd kind of just hop in the back of the van, so I grew up riding the back of the van going to the races, so it's kind of just what I knew.
Was this all you ever wanted to do, even from your childhood?
Yeah, as soon as I got to an age where you kind of start thinking about what you might want to do, I was probably 8, 9 years old. That's what I always dreamed of doing.
If you weren't training horses, what else do you think you might be doing?
That's a good question. I always said if I wasn't training horses, that I'd want to be a high school basketball coach, so maybe doing that.
Really?
Yeah.
No interest in being on Cal's staff?
Well, yeah, if it got that far, yeah, I'd love to. But I was trying to set realistic goals to begin with.
Did you play basketball growing up?
I played growing up through high school, yeah, but that was about it for me. But so that's kind of I enjoy watching it, and I don't get to watch it as much anymore, but that used to be what my second biggest interest would have been.
What position did you play?
I was a guard. I probably wasn't good enough to handle the ball all the time, so I kind of played more of the two, mixture of point guard and two guard, just depending on who else was in the game.
And I'm going to go out on a limb here and say it's all about the Kentucky Wildcats for you?
Yes.
Well, there's another team up the road in the Derby City, so I'm just making sure I got my facts
straight. No, we're not too worried about them.
Do you get a chance to, of course, you're at Oakland now, so you don't, but do you get a chance to stop back and go to any games at all?
I haven't been to a game in a couple of years now. Growing up, we have season tickets, so growing up, we went to all the games, but I have not been in a couple of years. I went home one year, I think, during Thanksgiving, and I got to go to a game then, but so it's been a few years, but I'll get back there eventually.
All right, let's talk about let's spend some time talking about your education too, because you went to UK and studied, what was it, equine? Give me the exact title.
Equine management.
Right, what does that entail?
It's basically just a business course with equine classes associated to it.
Okay.
It wasn't nothing too in-depth.
Is there anything you
lot more on the racetrack.
Yeah, I was going to say, is there anything you take away from the schooling and those programs that you can apply to your operation today?
I mean, I guess some of the business courses, I guess, I took minor accounting courses. I guess basically that's about it. Everything else is stuff that I learned here.
So I know we talked about your dad and your uncle's approach to training, and you kind of touched on your biggest strength in the first half of the program, but what's the key, Reeve, to being a successful horse trainer?
I think a lot of it is just putting in the work start to finish. I mean, from when you first start working on the racetrack, there's always something to learn. Things are always different, so you just kind of have to pay attention to everything, and you can learn from everyone back here, good or bad. So I think just being aware of everything that's going on and being aware of what's going on with the horses and knowing what their day-to-day attitudes are and things about them, and you know, basically just trying to be aware of everything that's going on around you.
Yeah, you know, much like when you were in Kentucky and you were in Florida with your dad, you have several top trainers there at Oaklawn that you can watch day in and day out. Dwayne Lucas comes to mind, for example. The coach is there. Will you spend time watching what they do at all and trying to pick up on things and learn from them?
Yeah, I kind of try to watch a little bit. You know, you try to focus on your horses, but it's kind of hard not to notice everybody else's. So, yeah, we're here, and Jerry Hollendorfer's in the barn right across from us, and obviously Lucas is here, and Asmussen, and there are a lot of big, successful barns here. So you kind of just try to pay attention a little bit to the things they do, and maybe you might pick up something that you like, and just kind of go from there.
If there was one other trainer in the sport today, taking your dad out of the equation and your uncle out of the equation, if there was another trainer in the sport today that you could spend the day with, pick their brain, go to dinner with them that evening, but you only got one day and you only got one trainer, who would that trainer be?
I've always been intrigued just because California seems to be so different. I'd probably say Bob Baffert, just watching it, is their ability just to bring a horse up to a big race and be at their best on the right day. It's always kind of impressed me. And, you know, I try to kind of really study the work tabs on their horses and just see their approach to how they do things. And, he's been successful for a long time, so there's a reason.
That'd be a fun dinner, too. He can tell some stories.
Yeah. I've never even met him, so I don't even know him personally, but just kind of always watch from afar.
Why do you think he's so good?
I think he knows how to get a horse ready for a big race, and he's not afraid to train him up to it. So they're ready when they go over there. It seems like fitness isn't going to be an issue, and basically, I think kind of almost like a lot of these football or basketball coaches, and the best players, you hear them talk about practice is harder than the game. So I think those really good horses, they're not afraid to train on them. And so when they go over there for the afternoons, they're ready for whatever comes to them.
Does Dwayne Lucas know that you wouldn't mind being a basketball coach?
I've only had a couple of brief conversations with him, and it hasn't come up.
You should let him know. He had a successful career coaching.
I said, no, you're right.
He might give you a few tips on that front. If you were coaching, what kind of coach do you think you'd be? You think you'd be a drill sergeant type, or would you be more the player's coach?
Probably more of the player's coach. I'm not a big drill sergeant type.
Same thing with your operation training horses?
Same thing, yeah. I probably need to find somebody that is capable of being the drill sergeant type, because it doesn't really match my personality so much, but there's probably an advantage to having that sort of attitude.
Yeah, it's a great point, that good cop, bad cop type of approach, right?
Exactly.
Well, we'll get to work on that and see if we can find somebody for you. Reeve McGahey is my special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Reeve, only about 4 minutes or so left in the program here, and I always like to kind of end the show by talking to trainers about their other hobbies or likes or interests outside of racing. So I know you already mentioned basketball, but are there other things that you'll enjoy doing if you do get a little time to get away?
I like to play golf. Sometimes it just makes me frustrated, so depends on the day. And I like eating good food. So usually going somewhere good to eat or playing golf, or Florida actually I don't get the chance to as much, mainly because I get too sore, but I was playing basketball a little bit in Florida and kind of enjoyed doing that again.
What kind of golfer are you?
Not as good now. I was a lot better when I got to play more, but I probably play around an 8 or a 10 nowadays.
You were lower than that before?
Yes, I was when I was younger and in high school and immediately out of high school, but the last few years it's pretty hit or miss.
Well, if I break 100, I'm happy. So that's impressive to me. It's very impressive. All right, so you said you like good food. So you come down to one meal. You can only have one meal in your life. What's it going to be?
One meal? Fried chicken for dinner, dark meat, macaroni and cheese. I don't know about the other sides. I'd have to think about it, but... Good macaroni and cheese and good fried chicken.
All right, we'll see if we can get somebody to send some by the barn for you.
There you go.
At some point here soon. Reeve, listen, man, I appreciate the visit. It's been so much fun to hear your story, and all the best with your horses now moving forward. And you're a class act, my friend. So let's go get it done and keep it rolling.
All right, well, appreciate it. Thank you for the time.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Reeve. Reeve McGahee here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Just fantastic. I mean, you can tell Reeve is much more reserved than his father, than his brother Chip. They tend to have that more outgoing personality, but a really smart kid and somebody who is going to do really well because he learned from the best. You learn from a guy like Shug McGahee, who, in my opinion, one of the greatest horsemen, forget about horse trainers, one of the greatest horsemen that we have in the sport, always putting the horses first. Charlie Lepresi, same cut from the same cloth. And I asked him in the first half of the interview about old school. What does that mean? His dad is often referred to as being old school, and I think Charlie probably would be too in some respects. And he said, well, I really don't know. I'm not sure what old school is. He said, probably just taking your time and being patient and doing what's right by the horse. And you heard him say that his father shows up to work every single day. And he's there when they run a horse. And there's no days off. And that's what makes a successful trainer. I remember asking Richard Mandela that question I like to ask trainers at the end of the show. I asked him about what he likes to do when he's not around the racetrack. And he basically said nothing. That's his life. Horses, horse racing, training horses, that is his life. And that is so cool. And that is, if you ask most of these big-time trainers, the Hall of Famers, the guys that are really, really good, they're going to tell you the same thing. And I think Reeve McGahee has that same trait to him. And that's why he's going to be so successful. Wonderful interview. If you missed any portion of the show, head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check it out there. You can also check us out on Apple Podcasts by Googling Horse Racing Radio Network. And follow us on social media, at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. That's going to do it for Trainer Talk here tonight. For my special guest, Reeve McGahee, for my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.